LimarkTechNet tonight at 8 o'clock. This is the W2VL repeater.
That time.
Greetings and salutations, everyone. Once again, I am AC2GS. My name is Roy, and I'm the control operator for this, the Limark Technical Net. For more than 44 years, people have been sitting in front of their radios on Sunday nights at 8 p.m. and discussing technology and science and learning some things and teaching some things and being entertained, hopefully. And I thank you once again for joining me this Sunday night at 8 p.m. when we try and do it all over again. Let me drop for a second, and I will give you our usual links. First up, if you want to contact me via email, my email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. That would be either for mailbag-type questions, or if you have an expertise in some technology in the news and want to share it with us, or if you have a TechNet puzzle, we're always looking for them. They're as rare as hen's teeth. Or if you want me to tap Paul, WS2N, on the shoulder and have him take a look at a space and NASA-related story, you can contact him directly. His email address is spacenetreport@gmail.com. In addition, as always, I cut and paste interesting articles and YouTubes and videos and all kinds of stuff on a link page, and I leave it available for the rest of you. So if you have a touch of insomnia and are curious to see if there's some interesting articles out there, these are some articles I found interesting. You get to it by typing into your browser roy.ac2gs.com. We have a chat room available. It's been quiet for the last few weeks. You can access it by typing into your browser chat.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring you to the chat room. We have a audio stream on the internet of the technical net, and I leave it live for the rest of the week, so you can listen into Glen Oaks when you don't have a radio around. Just type into your browser technet.ac2gs.com, and that'll give you our audio stream. And as always, I like to remind people that Mike, KC2NJI, has a great archive site. It's called amateurradio.tv, and it's been visited by over a million visitors, and it has archives of the Limark Technical Net that go as far back as September of 2006. So avail yourself of the wisdom of a lot of hams who've moved out of the area, or unfortunately some that have passed away and become silent keys through the years. And their wisdom persists in the audio files, so avail yourself of them. There were some very, very smart fellows who passed by here. Anyway, let me drop for a second, and I'll tell you what we got planned. Okay, a regular vanilla episode tonight. Surprisingly, artificial intelligence hasn't made that many news stories this week. So, thankfully, they took a little bit of a respite. We could all be thankful for small favors. So, we will start, as we usually do, with questions, comments, and topics for discussion. I would prefer if the first few be amateur radio related, although, as everyone knows by now, I'll accept any technological, scientific-type question and try my best, and hopefully, at the very least, give you some resources to go look at them. That should take us approximately to 10:50, and Paul, WS2N, will join us for the SpaceNet report, and that should take us approximately to 11 p.m. I will return to tie a bow on everything and wish you well for the coming week. So if my shack continues to work and the laws of physics continue to work and the repeater, which was hiccuping last week, continues to work and I don't get kicked too much, too often off of All-Star, that's how I got it planned. So we'll hope for the best and we'll settle with the rest. Anyway, we're open for business. If anyone have any questions, comments, or topics tonight, please hit that push to talk. Give me your first name, your call sign, and whether it's amateur radio related or science and stuff like that there. So let the games begin. Okay, your amplitude is very low again.
6 a.m., Cambridge or related.
Much better, Wes. Anyone else want to put their name on the list?
8D2VHD.
Very good, Jim. You're on the list. Anyone else want to put their name on the list for tonight? Well, once again, my surmise is that as the night progresses, there'll be some late people coming in to want to put their name on the list. Or at least I hope so. Wes, do you mind if we take Jim first?
No problem at all.
Okay, Jim, what do you got for us tonight?
A very vanilla question. I think you'll be able to answer it easily. As I'm learning about antennas and tuned circuits and RF and whatnot, I'm constantly being perplexed about 50-ohm coax cable. All these impedance things have to do with different frequencies reacting with the different characteristics of circuits. How can a 50-ohm coax be 50 ohms from 160 meters to microwave or to 2 meters? What am I missing in that concept? Please explain.
Well, coaxial cables are themselves tuned circuits, so they're not all capacitive, they're not all inductive. They're a series of lumped, tuned, capacitive, inductive, parallel circuits that come out to be 50 ohms. And you can change the inherent impedance to a coaxial cable by adjusting the dimensions of the center conductor, the braided shield, and more important, the dielectric material, the dielectric constant, and the dimensions, the thickness of the dielectric. But if you ever Google lumped circuit coaxial cable, you'll see a representation of an endless series of parallel connected capacitors and inductors that keep the impedance at that approximate level, no matter what frequency you're operating at.
What was that term you used that I should search?
Lumped circuit, L-U-M-P-E-D.
Interesting. I'll look into it. Thanks for the explanation. Back to that.
You're welcome, Jim. Anyone else want to put their name on the list for tonight? We got lots of space, so hit that push to talk and give me your name.
Alpha Echo 2, Yankee Golf.
Hello, Sam. How are you tonight?
Weary after 18 holes of golf. Thank you for asking.
I'm sure you had fun.
A few lost golf balls, too.
You can always buy more golf balls, right? You got a question tonight, or you just wanted to check in?
Just hanging around listening to some intelligent conversation. Thank you.
Okay, Sam. Have fun. Enjoy. We'll try one more time. Anyone else want to put their name on the list for tonight? Please tell me now. I mean, you can tell me later, but it's easier if you tell me now. Okay, well, we'll see what the rest of the night has in store for all of us. Wesley, I guess you're up.
Okay, I'm here. How do you receive me?
I don't know why, but your amplitude is low again.
Is my amplitude low again now?
No, it's much better. It's a little bit bassy, not that much treble. I mean, understandable, but if you could tweak up the treble a little bit, it would it would sound better.
Okay, I'm gonna try to do that. And you tell me if it's good. Hold on. I'm gonna try to tweak it a little bit more. How about now? 1, 2, 3, 4, 1. Okay. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. Go ahead. Hold on.
Okay. The treble is decent, but you keep on kind of lowering your voice. It sounds like you're whispering into the microphone.
How's it now? 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Yeah, that's okay.
Okay. And so it's in. I'm going to try to speak a little bit louder. Usually I don't, but it's okay. So the plenty of material, the one that is not on the lease because it was sent right before the TechNet. We have a $100,000 ham radio antenna tower. So there is a radio echo communication. Those are two guys, Ray Higgins, W2RE, and Robert Higgins, KC2UPN, and they usually serve a commercial and amateur community in installing antenna towers. And they have plenty of years of experience in it. And the W2RE, from that what I understood, he put the number of towers in Maine, and he also put in his vacation house in Catskill Mountains. So imagine you have a 120 feet antenna with antenna tower with 96 elements altogether of Yagis on it. And the tower is rotatable. I hope you were able to view the material. Let me know.
Yeah, I heard part of it. I wonder if this is the same guy who owns, I think it's called Remote Ham. It used to be these guys who were tower riggers, and they apparently hated the business. So they decided to just rig their own towers and then rent out time. And there are a lot of hams out there that, you know, rent out. They have less expensive, they have more expensive setups. And there was one particular strange guy who used to frequent this repeater, haven't heard him in years, who had the nerve to, he rented out that remote access, and he had the nerve to take, he cut and pasted images of the system from Remote Hams, and he put it on his own QRZ page as his own shack. But he was an inveterate liar anyway, so, I was wondering if that's the same guy from Remote Hams.
That I don't know, but I have some information. Radio Echo Communication was created by those two guys, and they say they have many years of experience in building and maintaining world-class stations operating at Hudson Valley Tower and Remote Radio, operating under the name Radio Echo Communications or whatsoever. In 2019, they were pretty busy, they say, maintaining the largest DX contest station in USA, and then plenty of photographs with humongous Yagi, so 200-pound Yagi 1, and they have a number of those Yagi stuck together. And they say that they operate in 160, 80, 40, 20, 15, 10. So I can imagine how big is 160 meters Yagi if there was one. Back to you.
I think there was a guy in Japan who had 160 meter Yagi, and you know he would have to replace the ball bearings on the rotators something like once a year. Yeah, it's the same guys. They used to run a thing called Hudson Valley Towers.
Ah, okay. Okay, the next one is for Roy to respond. Ham radio operator wants to shoot FTX 1, and he wants to use 3 bullets for it. 208 Winchester ammunition, frequency code 208 ammo, 7.65 by 51. Ammunition is incredibly popular choice among hunters and rifle shooters. The ham radio operator has 150,000 subscribers on his YouTube, and the video is called Ham Radio. Hold on. FTX 1 is a big no for me. So I put some comments on it. I was trying to be very friendly to it, and I was trying to understand. And, of course, I'm not criticizing him because he has a full right to do with his radio whatever he wants. And I was trying to tell him that there are a number of ways of trying to find a solution for his problems. And his problems were, number one, incomplete locking of the screen when working on SOTA. And I'm talking about $1,600 radio. Two, lack of ability of charge the battery from USB charger that is not yet on the market, even though that it was advertised and its model number is available. Model number, but not the charger. Later on, he found that there is a charging port from the rear of it. The three, number three, rig expert. So you have those devices. I believe you have a rig expert that is made in Ukraine. It shows one almost one to one as WR for his vertical width antenna, and that's the Diamond RH707. And when he put that to FTX one, he cannot tune it. It shows infinity. So I gave you two questions because I think I know the answer to that. First question, can you name the problem, Roy, and solution for it, especially for the antenna? And why doesn't it want to tune when connected to FTX1? Back to you. Hold on.
Well, I mean, They're kind of the same question. But I think simply because in one case he has a counterpoise, in the other case he doesn't.
And I think you have a right answer. That's what I wrote as a comment on this video. And he connected the counterpoise and he still doesn't help. And then I made another comment. Now, you got to remember that if you write the comments one after the other, YouTube thinks that this is something not right and deletes those comments. It didn't happen to me, so. Then I said, go for nano DNA. It's a small addition, but it helps a lot. But he said, I changed my mind. I'm not going to shoot it with three bullets or one bullet. I'm going to just trade it. So he traded for another ICOM radio. Back to you for the comments.
Okay, that's a more sane approach. I don't see the point of shooting things unless they're targets. You know, if he would have done it, I would have simply assumed that he's another chucklehead who's just looking for clicks on YouTube. You know, he has AdSense set up, and he wants to make a couple of bucks off of it. You know, I mean, there are people who shoot all kinds of semi-foolish things, and as much as I dislike Tesla cars, you know, there were a slew of guys who just lined up to shoot Cybertrucks one after the other. I mean, if you've seen one, you've seen them all type of thing. So YouTube is full of good and bad things. I love YouTube for some things, and I despise it for others. Almost every topic is thumbnailed into an absurd type of of hyperbolic nonsense. You know, you can't believe almost any headline on YouTube these days because everyone is desperate to get clicks because profits are going down on YouTube. So I'm glad he decided to simply trade it to someone who would like to use it instead of putting bullet holes through it.
Yeah, when it came into exchange, I was thinking of another way to understand the problem that he had with the antenna, a Diamond RH-707, which is nothing else but just a vertical dipole. It could work good on the car, on the radio, with the Rick Expert. It shows pretty good SWR. But then I look at the transceiver FTX1 and Optima. They are the same radios and they use the same plastic mold for it. It is just that FTX1 Optima has the amplifier which is connected to the receiver, which is like a front panel, front head, whatever, and it has more metal in it to act as a counterpoise. So ESO made some steps to economize expenses because of the Chinese competition, I assume, but at the same time, that might be the reason. What do you think about it?
Perhaps. But I'm a little confused. Why are you calling the antenna a dipole?
Just a wording. Whip antenna.
Yeah, it's a monopole. That's why it needs counterpoise.
That's correct. It just automatically, I use the word improper word.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure we were on the same wavelength.
Dr. Roy, I love your comments and your corrections and your criticism. Do it more often. That's what makes education better. English is not my native language, and sometimes I have a tendency to use improper words. Okay. Camps divided and protesting against each other. So it's like a déjà vu. It's a French word already seen. The phenomenon of feeling like one has lived through the present situation in the past. And I'm going to start from a little bit of history. At 1901, at December 12, Marconi sent the first radio transmission 2,000 miles across the Atlantic Ocean from Cornwall, England, to St. John's, Newfoundland. And AM, which is double side amplitude modulation, was invented in 1886. But until 1894, there was not much progress in it. The Marconi succeeded, but only around 1909. After the discovery of triod in 1906, that became widely used in commercial broadcasting.
How much are you going to drop? I mean, you know?
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. Yeah. Okay, I didn't press the button. Okay, so then we have a Columbia University in 1908 and amateur club formed by them. And we have PhDs and special scientific minds like Dr. Roy, among ham radio operators, and also the other guys who are not really into science. They might be extremely good in art and other things, but not necessarily to that. So the rapid expansion at Evenmania for amateur radio with many thousands of transmitters set up from 1910 led to widespread problem, and radio started to be commercial and military, used by commercial and military entities, and became very much regulated. So around 1912, Titanic sank and United Congress passed the Radio Act of 1912 with restriction that ham radio operators can only operate at higher frequencies than 200 meters. And that was the first regulation. And then we have a situation when in 1956, that was ARRL, National Conventions, and we had Art Collins, remember the Collins radios? He was giving a speech about SSB and Reed. And there was something that was not really good for AM guys. So they stood up and walked out of the room. Another story was that AM operators tuning up right on the top sideband QSO were trying to interrupt somebody's conversation or sabotaging sideband demos in Hanford, or even one guy misaligned the oscillator on the demo rig to make it sound awful. So there was. And we still have AM guys who love to have AM conversation. They are very proud of it. The same is with DMR and plenty of other form of radio communications, and they say this is not the real radio, and 2LE is operating with FT8, LTY, and others. That was the guy who made the video and cut a title of the video is Hams and Divided and Protesting Against Each Other. And Dr. Wolf, for your comment.
Well, you know, there are people who embrace change for change's sake. There are people who are annoyed and upset with any change. And, you know, it's always been the case. I've often joked that fortunately SparkGap is an awful means of communicating. It produces a lot of noise and harmonics and ozone, which could ruin your lungs. It's only through that that the FCC and the other agencies through history kind of made SparkGapping illegal. Otherwise, to this very day, there would probably be some organization that had SparkGap in its name and suggested that the only true amateur radio operator is the SparkGap operator. But that's the nature of things. Different strokes for different folks. Some people love amplitude modulation. I could sort of understand some people getting annoyed because there'd be a whole bunch of new people with new radios that these old-timers would have to buy new radios to be able to use single sideband. You can't retrofit single sideband. So, you know, the same thing with DMR, Fusion, you know, all these lovely modes. They're all open to anyone and everyone. They tend to, unfortunately, balkanize our hobby. They put them in little spaces. You know, there are DMR people who love DMR, but for some odd reason hate Fusion, and they hate D-Star, and vice versa. So, unfortunately, I see this as fractionating the hobby, but you know, at least it gives people more options. More options are always better than less options.
Yeah, but the ham radio is a very much social form of activity, and we take unmodulated carrier, 300 hertz, 600 hertz, we take single sideband, 2.4 kilohertz, and if we take AM is 6 kilohertz, but commercial one goes to 25 and even 50. So with limited bandwidth that we have available for ham radios, if those guys come with their AM radios and high power, it's not much room for us.
Well, you know, I mean, there are a lot of people who like to hog the bandwidth. Not only is there single sideband and amplitude modulation, but there's extended sideband. So, you know, these guys are doing single sideband, but they're doing it with a 6 kilocycle bandwidth for God knows what reason. I guess because they're playing music or something to themselves. I don't know. But anyway, I didn't want to forget to mention, you brought up the concept of déjà vu. Déjà vu is a French word. It means the full sense that you've been through something like this exactly once before. And there's a lot of people out there that kind of think that it's a neurophysiological version of multipath delay. You know, we all talk about multipath delay for television signals that gave us double images and such. So I thought I might just point out that déjà vu might be the neurophysiological multipath delay.
I do thank you very much for your explanation. Especially from you, it sounds very much credible and helpful. The next one is Flex Radio, Smart SDR 3.9, preview video 6 features, and that's the name of the video. And because Dr. Roy has a Flex, I know that we spoke about this radio so many times, but now there are 6 new features. Would you please say a few words?
Yeah, well, I didn't really write down the 6 features. They're not incredible. There's one that might be incredible down the line. One of them is a pre-distortion correction, which is something that Flex has promised for 6 or 7 years. It's been on their, when they issued a planned, software design model many years ago, it was on that. Then when they realized that they were upsetting people by not doing what they said they were promising to do, they stopped issuing any kind of a plan. So they have a pre-distortion. What pre-distortion correction is that it feeds back on itself. It takes the signal out of the driver of the radio, puts it back into an input, and compares it with the original signal it generated, because it just generated the signal in real time, and it sees the perturbations, the distortions, and sort of designs a set of instructions to auto-correct the type of distortions it sees before it feeds it to the final stage of the linear amplifier. The problem is that this is called a beta, so I don't know how good it is, and I don't know how long it's going to stay in beta. So that's good and bad news. The other bits and pieces are, you know, interesting, but not really massively different than they are now. They were supposed to make it remote control usable to other people other than the owner. When 3.0 came out, one of the new features was supposed to be remote control in general. They made it remote control, but they locked it into the Google Mail address of the owner. So if I wanted you to use my Flex radio, I would have to give you the password to a very important Gmail account, which is not a good idea, and no one does it. And so they were supposed to open it to other users and let the owner decide who has access and who doesn't, and they still haven't done that. So, you know, a B-minus, score. I'm not that thrilled. If this would have come 5 or 6 years earlier, I would have been impressed. It's a little too late, but, you know, maybe they'll change their evil ways. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, There are people, and to exchange, there are people who spend $100,000 for the tower. And there are people who want to buy 7760, and there are people who buy Flex. And when you already get that, I remember when I was buying those two 10 with 2000, one for the car, the mobile version, and the other one, the black version of 10 with 2000 for the base station. I thought that I'm going to have it forever. Right now it looks like it's a time to let them go, but the cost of the new one is again requiring me to spend more money. Why should I? If somebody has the money and wants to do it, that why not? Talking about the Flex Radio 3.9, it offers smart signal APD, analog meters, USB serial pass-through, TG XL integration, and keyback fixes. Another one is, yeah, you made a comment in the email, so back to you, a radio that is built by Ham Club. So there is a Ham Radio Club for hams, is building radios, and of course is selling those radios, but inexpensively, I assume. Dr. Ray has more information.
Well, I mean, you have all the information because you sent me the information. I don't know. I mean, okay, the more the merrier, you know, whatever. I can't be, you know, I mean, there's nothing particularly revolutionary about all these things. They're all software-defined radios. I like software-defined radios. You know, I prefer them, as I've mentioned repeatedly to you, I prefer them with a company backing them. A bunch of guys backing them, or, you know, a company in India backing, or China, or something else, not so much. So when I'm going to invest a significant amount of money, I'd rather have a legitimate company that has more than, you know, two employees and a couple of guys working part-time in the back room. But, yeah, everyone's, you know, can answer that question themselves. By the way, I just wanted to comment, you know, those features for the Flex. The USB kind of the serial controller only works for RS-232 devices. So all you guys who actually bought stuff in the last 10 years and have a USB connector, you can't do anything with it as far as that's concerned. The linear amplifier that Flex makes that now can be controlled with their own software. If you don't own that, there's not much to that. And as far as an analog meter, within about 6 months of, I think, Smart SDR coming out 12 years ago, someone came out with more than a couple of variations of analog meters that showed up on the computer window. So I've had analog meters from the get-go. So again, too little, too late. But again, you know, if you're interested in giving strangers money who probably have a great idea, great. I don't want to kind of play Russian roulette with my money.
Comment?
Sure.
Alpha Echo 2, Yankee Golf. Comment. Aren't most radios sold today SDRs?
Yes. Thankfully, yes. The future is for software-defined radios. There are still a few in the production line that are mixed, that go to, usually they're two tuners. One tuner is pure software-defined radio. The other has legacy up to the IF stage, and then it takes the IF stage and digitizes it, and the rest of the run operates as a software-defined radio. But that's the future, in my opinion, because what you're able to do in silicon inevitably becomes cheaper and smaller and more efficient. And legacy devices aren't going to change. They'll require legacy devices.
Yeah, it's just interesting because I used to love playing with the knobs on an old Helicrafter as opposed to the new radios that exist.
Well, you know, I mean, there are radios out there for people who like knobs and buttons. I think it's the Kenwood from about 8-9 years ago that had 10 trillion buttons and knobs. I think that's a trend that's fading away. Guys who've been in this hobby for many years have a strong predilection, I found at least, to buttons and dials and knobs. I mentioned repeatedly my 6700 has 6 buttons and 1 small OLED or actually fluorescent display, I think, but little else. It's all run on a computer surface. Which, you know, I think younger people are more happy to work through a computer surface or a laptop or an iPad or even a cell phone interface.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Sam. Wes?
Okay. So the project that I was talking about that is built by Klopp for ham radio operators, I agree with you completely. It is better if there is a private entity has employees and somebody is responsible for something. But if you have a bunch of amateurs building something for other amateurs, there is no real technical support for what is built. But it is called ADX Project. Build Dayton. Build Dayton. Dayton. BUILDATHON event. Okay. So the ADX is easy to build. It uses only 2 whole components. Although the LPF may use 1206 SMD capacitors. It allows you to transmit only in WSPR JS8 FT4 FT8 digital modes. So that's at 80, 40, 30, 20, 17, 15, and 10 meters. So that's for the guys who want to operate in digital modes. They love it. And it is still ham radio, so we're talking about AM guys who are opposing single sidebound. Maybe there are less of them right now, and we have a less problem with them. Everything with this ham radio we do not oppose because we are one group of people who is here for ham radio. So the band is selected via software. And you may manually change the band pass filter when you change the band. So imagine that you change the band and now you have to unplug something, plug in. So that's the SDR they have built as a kit, and you can buy probably quite cheaply. It is nicely made, but it is more like dealing with the PCB. Back to you, Dr. Roy, for your comments.
Yeah. Time to kill. You like to solder, and you like to tinker around and play with things. It seems fine. It's just, you know, I can do all the digital modes that I need to, you know. And, you know, unfortunately, I'm one of those guys who life is too short for QRP. I understand people love the challenge, and I hope they enjoy it. I wouldn't find it challenging, personally. I mean, it would be difficult to do, but it would be a thankless task in my eyes. So, you know, different strokes for different folks.
Okay. TV radio in Australia is changing. What do you need to know? That's the title of the video. It's nothing special. And Australia wanted to be like America, like United States. And EU was like Australia, so now they can transmit at 26.95, 27.405. for the citizen band and ultra high frequency 476 megahertz 0.4125 to 477.4125. FM and SSB is also allowed in the EU and USA. But I wasn't operating on FM on 28 megahertz. How popular is that, Dr. Ross?
Which part of the frequency?
10 meters, 28 megahertz.
10 meters is, for the most part, dead. I was on it this morning. I actually talked to North Carolina. But with the exception of that single North Carolina, everyone was either in Queens or in Brooklyn. It was a very local net. So I think we're going to be suffering through the same thing that we went through last year during the spring and summer. The geomagnetic storms are just disrupting the heck out of F1 and F2. No matter how much they ionize whatever is there, there's not much there presently. So I did talk to North Carolina, which was fun. There was a significant amount of fade going on, though.
Okay, thank you very much for your comment. Hamburger bands at LF and VLF may become obsolete due to technological advancement. So I've read the scientific paper, and that was from India. It's a third most prolific publisher of research papers in the world. Although the value of those papers may be questionable, they indicate technological advancement and eventually global reaction and FCC changes. Hams are tolerated as long as the money do not conflict with them. So one of the quotes was actually helpful. By international agreement, we use 10 to 100 kilohertz. And that is allowed for WPT charging, so charging devices that we use for the cell phones or whatever. And the frequency that is being used for electric vehicles is 42 to 48 kilohertz and 52 to 58 kilohertz. Now we're talking about the WPT, then we're talking about frequencies that is close to 127 kilohertz, which is the lower ham radio band. Now, 19.21 kilohertz and 51 to 61 kilohertz is also heavy used by electrical vehicles, and that's the buses with charging powers from 75 to 300 kilowatts. And 85 kilohertz is also proposed for electrical vehicles, and that's for the power from 3.7 to 11 kilowatts using low voltage AC grid. So the lower ham band radio at 2,200 meters and 136 kilohertz is very close to that. The need of charging drones, EVs, currently dominate in the world of customers, and a current method of energy transfer is that WPT, which is stands for wireless power transfer. And I believe Tesla uses it too in the new vehicles. Honestly, I don't really like very much the Cybertruck. But I don't know what you think about the bacteria.
Well, I've given everyone my opinion enough times that they could probably repeat it back to me. I don't know what the future is for the low bands. I don't know what the future is for the high bands these days. We live in questionable times. So I wouldn't put any money down on anything right now. The universe seems to be in flux.
comment?
Certainly.
Alpha Echo 2, Yankee Golf. Any news with the FCC and their note and comment stage?
As far as I'm aware, nothing whatsoever. They have not issued any responses. I don't think the ARRL has published their what they sent to them. I could be wrong, but I don't recall seeing anything other than the initial kind of namby-pamby response of someone who doesn't want to get their head kicked in. So as far as I'm aware, there's nothing. You know, it's still subject to their own internal ruminations, I would assume.
Scary times.
Yes, in many, 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 many ways.
Okay. And Greg here. Super thin cloaks mediated by spoof surface plasma. There were a few times when I was talking about waveguides and we could have waveguides in form of the pipe that could be rectangular. And there are certain modes that apply to those waveguides. But there are also waveguides that are flat. So as long as you have a conductive medium and something at the top of it, which is dielectric, or you have two dielectrics, but those dielectrics are having a different dielectric constant, you creating a flat the waveguide. And strip lines uses them in commercial market, but also ham radio manufacturers are trying to put them into various numbers of devices, not only dedicated to commercial use. So each frequency, so we're talking about a pipe that is made for, or rectangular, the waveguide that is made for the frequency 144 megahertz, it would be humongous, but if we're talking about one that is made for 2-3 gigahertz and more of that, they are very much elegant, very much nice and thin. And they allowed to send the power from point A to point B with minimum of losses. But then, a few years ago, we had a lot of information about invisibility. And number of manufacturers, number of scientific papers were talking about thin material that is able to somehow trap light, and light is electromagnetic wave, and that light goes around and actually doesn't see the object that is in the middle. And one of the frequencies has a very much specific wording talking about surface plasma and polariton, and it is called SPP. Okay. So scientists found the way that you don't need any material at all, but actually you need one. If you have a conducting medium, and you know that around the conducting medium you have air, and air is dielectric, and you are able to trap the electromagnetic wave between the space of the air and the conductive medium, that could be foil or whatsoever, or the special form of the material. Or you have a dielectric material, but air has different dielectric constant, then you actually may provide guide like with the waveguide, the electromagnetic wave, which is the light all around the object, and the object becomes invisible. And there is the number of experiments was made at the frequency of 8.2 gigahertz, which is not that bad. They didn't have a quite good result, but good enough to write about it. And then I sent some materials of it. We don't know how good it is, and even the picture of the device, how it looks like, and manufacturing methods. So the detailed manufacturing, let me... detailed manufacturing is described as follows. You have a 20 nanometer thick polyamide that is coated with silicon wafer as a substrate. So we're talking about one dielectric. Then it was cured with hot plate at 120, 180 and 250 degrees of centigrade. So we're talking about 250 centigrade, say, about 800 Fahrenheit. Might be wrong. I'm operating European standard measurement values for 20 minutes, and then a standard polylithography was then conducted before depositing TIAU layer. So we're talking about titanium layer. With electron beam evaporation, which is a normal stuff, nothing special right now. After that, we have a material that is able to act with air and eventually created a trap of electromagnetic waves that could go around. So let's say you're wearing such a stuff or you put it on the object, and it becomes invisible, but actually it becomes partially invisible. It's nothing perfect. But Dr. Roy had an idea, a comment, and I like that comment very much. Dr. Roy, back to you.
In terms of what?
Yeah, you made the comment about you sent me the picture about real invisibility, and that was actually the video. The cloaking device actually works. Back to you.
Oh, okay. Well, the YouTube was a mess. The YouTube was a combination of a classical magic trick using mirrors, which I sent you. More recent YouTube of a guy demonstrating the mirror trick. And the other stuff is CGI nonsense. So it was all rather obviously nonsense.
Okay. Well, from a physics standpoint, it's not a nonsense. It's proven. It's proven that two dielectric materials having different dielectric constant could trap the wave, the electromagnetic wave inside. And sometimes grating is being used to just push that electromagnetic wave inside. Sometimes other methods are being used, and it works. And it has a commercial application as well. As far as invisibility, you might be partially right or totally right. And that might be something that is still in the dream of scientists.
Yeah, I mean, the basic concept that you sent me were cloaking devices. And I watch Star Trek as well. And unless you're connected to a Romulan, you're not going to see a cloaking device anytime too soon. And that's what's nonsense. I'm not talking about any kind of theoretical, laboratory-based, infinitesimal findings. I'm talking about those idiot pictures, those videos of a guy seemingly taking a green screen and covering himself with it, but having it finagled into looking like it's a cloaking device. that makes anyone below the green screen disappear and exposes the background, which it wouldn't expose the background. But he put it in the green screen software, and he simply added the background. So it's all...